fighting for America.
Whether liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican, white, black, brown, rich, poor, when it comes to our troops, we stand united. We are proud of you. We support you. And we can never thank you enough.
Fighting for Idaho.
Most of the freshmen that I've met are, yes, they're conservative members of Congress, but not the extreme conservative. Man, I can live with that because that's where I feel like I'm coming from.
Fighting for you.
I don't think marijuana should be treated any different than beer. I mean, you could outlaw obesity.
Hey.
Boise's Mr. Right.
A little too close to home, buddy.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I can't believe this. This is a Christmas surprise. The chairman of the Idaho Republican Party, Stephen Yates, with us. He just kind of walked in. How are you?
Doing well, Kevin. Thank you.
Now, weren't you in Taiwan or Hong Kong or somewhere?
I was in Taiwan, 15 hours ahead of here, and my body is here, and my body clock is most of the way here. I've had a few days to adjust, but I find with age it takes longer.
Right. You've mastered the social media. I keep track of you by, you know, what show you're on, TV or radio, or what country you're in.
Well, unfortunately, to some people, it seems like you're being a braggart. But, you know, with Facebook, there are a lot of people who want to be your friends who really just want to be your stalkers. And there are some people who really are your friends and your family. And some people who ask, will you please tell me where you are so that, you know, we can come get in touch with you or tell me about your media stuff. So it's a fine line that I walk. I don't know that I walk it well. It's in the eye of the beholder.
I see. Well, I just marvel at your work ethic and your workload. So you're on these shows all the time, whether it's the Fox Business Channel, the Fox News Channel, the ever-opinionated Dana Show and Glenn and everybody else. What would you like to talk about today?
Well, I guess
what big issue?
Well, there's a couple of big issues. I worry that we are a nation increasingly at risk at home and abroad. And so if you want to talk about the two biggest categories of why are we continuing to be at risk abroad and what do we need to be doing at home, I think there's a couple of big things. Everybody has the issues that matter most to them, and they tend to be in sort of the area they circulate in. It's not as if I circulate in a bigger circle or a more important circle, but when it comes to the issue that matters most to me here in Idaho, I am really concerned about federal encroachment in an activist Obama administration in its last 2 years. And I really try to talk with as many people as I can in the state about what constructively can we do to support our leaders to be strong and innovative and effective on the 10th Amendment. We all talk about it. Almost all of us believe strongly in it.
Right.
I think it's under assault, and we need to think a lot about that. And I think that's at home a very high priority. Abroad, you know, this attack in Sydney, absolutely revolting slaughter of school children in Pakistan, grinding civil war in Syria that spawned ISIS. People pop up as lone wolf attackers around the world. We really need a serious discussion as a nation about how do we live up to the constitutional mandate for having this republic, providing for the common defense. What do we need to do? And I just don't think we have a rich conversation on those things.
As someone who has worked in the government, now you're on the outside here at 580KIDO, what about the role of the press? Are you shocked that Chuck Todd asked your former boss on Meet the Press comparatively to the, you know, we sued the Japanese because of the Bataan Death March, comparing what we did to save America to the Bataan Death March and his reaction, which was incredible. And you're very close with the former vice president. I just wonder your thoughts when how Dick Cheney responded to that.
Well, I thought it was a genuine response from him. He has spent, people don't know very much about Dick Cheney the man. They know a lot about Dick Cheney the image, and he hasn't really cared that much about his image over the years. And so in many quarters, it's not great. Many of us who've been around the man, sometimes we marvel at the liberal friends he keeps. And then other times we marvel at the depth of research and contemplation that he has done on things over the years in terms of substance of issues and how government should function. He has been deeply, deeply concerned about how to respond to the violent ideology that is Islamism, and how to respond effectively as a government to provide for the common defense. So everything from the Ebola scare to continuity of government, all these things he's really thought a lot about. And yet that was a straight from the heart, what are you thinking kind of response to Chuck Todd's question. Of course, torture is what those guys did on 9/11 to 3,000 people, having to make a phone call from a burning down skyscraper, giving your last words. That the phone calls that came from planes about to hit buildings because they were in cell signal and they could call, that's torture.
Well, and again, you think of Barbara Olson calling her husband Ted Olson as one of the ones that stands out among many. But, you know, we're sitting here watching Fox News. We have Megyn Kelly interviewing the guy who waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And I'm thinking, and Fox News aside, why is the press giving, you know, acting as the defense attorney to these terrorists that have committed and continue to commit horrific acts?
That's right. I mean, I think it's legitimate in our system for people to debate what kind of rules and procedures our government should follow in acting on our behalf to provide for the common defense. There is a little bit of an element of the argument that was in A Few Good Men, that where you had statements like, well, you know, you need me on that wall.
Right.
And you can't handle the truth. Now, most people say, no, I can handle the truth. Tell it to us. We want a debate. The more distance we have from a terrible act of mass violence, and sometimes the more distance we have from actual responsibility in government, the clearer the solutions become, the wisdom of our own views becomes. And it was an immensely complicated crisis situation after the 9/11 attack. I don't think we got everything 100% right. And I think it's right to go back and look about how we could get things better. But litigating what was done, trying to move the goalposts on people who were obeying lawful orders at the time, I think is an injustice. And what that gentleman said most poignantly stuck out to me. He says, I am willing to give my life for my country, but I am not willing to give my life for some political theater just because people a decade after the fact want to score points. And that, you know, I identify 1,000% with that sentiment. There are a lot of great people in our country who have given all, are willing to give all, it's on our defense. We need them. We need them on that wall. I think put it into the right place and have the discussion about liberty at home. And
even the threat of ISIS, we're giving ISIS the benefit of the doubt. And we talk about what happened in Australia. You've mentioned Pakistan. These are folks that are committing horrific acts. If you don't show them, if you don't speak their language, we give them their Miranda rights. We're not going to get any. We're going to continue to lose.
I agree with that. We'll have a debate with the presidential primary process in the next election about the broad direction the country should go. George W. Bush put us on what he called a war footing on the war on terror. President Obama has tried to preside over a period where he declared the tide of war is retreating and decidedly moved us onto a law enforcement footing with regard to terrorism. I think there's going to be a little bit of a pendulum swing back, but to where is unclear. But there is only one language that this strain of Islamism understands, and it is violence. They engage in a degree of barbarism where you can't really negotiate with them as rational actors. They are willing to cut the heads off of children because they don't belong to their religion. We had this recent episode of teenagers who refused to renounce Christianity, and they cut their heads off. And how do you reason and negotiate with those groups? Sometimes you can have inducements. You might be able to buy off Vladimir Putin from time to time, but you cannot buy off an Islamist offshoot.
Why do we fail to understand that? It's shaped by the press. Well, they seem reasonable. That you get this. You've lived in the world. You understand it at the highest levels. They don't speak our language. They don't want compromise. As you said, they don't want to speak our language.
Right. They have a clear mission. They have what we should have. They have defined their enemy.
Right.
They have identified the means they aim to use to influence their enemy. They are executing their plan, and they are not wavering in the face of what other opinions might be, because they are clear in identifying what they see as the higher purpose, but also the tactical structural response, and they have allies. We talk about, and this I think is another thing that came out very clearly recently, was this notion that you can focus only on core al-Qaeda or only on ISIS in Iraq clearly is not true. These lone wolf attacks are lone wolves to a degree, but they're linked by something. They're animated by something. That man in Australia put up a flag that communicated something, and it wasn't Australian. And so the reach of this animating force, I'd say the spread of evil, it doesn't know geographic boundaries. And it's time we woke up and put a structure of defense in our country, and came up with a theory of national defense abroad in place that I think the nation is ready for an adult conversation on.
We go to the phones, and we go to Ron Paul Jim at 580KIDO. Good morning, Ron Paul Jim.
Good morning. Well, let the GOP charade begin. You know, you gloss right over that part about states' rights, you know, but never mentioned anything about securing the borders, you know, controlling the immigrants that might be hostile to this nation, the ones that we're pissing off in the Middle East. You know, and the reason why those people are so well armed and funded is because that was our foreign policy, was to arm and fund these radicals to go against somebody like Assad. And I would like to ask you, what exactly did Assad do again? Because I don't know. Everything I've heard was accusations and a fictitious, false flag of him using chemical weapons after Obama draws the line in the sand. I'll be crossing the line if he uses chemical weapons on his people. And it's been proven that that was a lie. So I'm really sick and tired of all these lies. Get us out of the Middle East. You know, quit playing geopolitics with resources and you know, power trips. This whole thing is a joke. Neither side does anything to rescind power from D.C. You have a much greater chance, probably 7-1, that you will be killed by a police officer in this country than by a terrorist.
All right, Ron Paul Jim, your thoughts.
He's welcome to his...
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station. Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Hope you're having a good day. Kevin Miller with you here. You're listening to 580KIDO, 580KIDO.com. Phone number's here, 580-5436, 580KIDO. Stephen Yates joining us, chairman of the Idaho Republican Party. And we go to Jeff in Boise. Jeff, good morning. What's your question?
Hey, this is a constitutional question for Mr. Yates. Mr. Yates, I did notice that you talked about the attack on the Constitution. If you agree to that assumption that all politics are local, what on earth is the Republican Party doing attacking our Constitution here in Idaho, the Idaho GOP? Right in the platform you have that you want to repeal the 17th Amendment to take away our right to vote for senator. Mr. Yates is repealing the Second Amendment next, is repealing the 19th Amendment, taking away women's right to vote next. I just don't understand. I don't understand how any educated, critical thinking Republican can sign off on the Republican platform. I know you're new. I know you walked into this, but what the heck is going on?
All right, Jeff, thank you for the question. So are you going to repeal the votes of women and take away our guns?
Well, it's an interesting analysis. I know that that not everyone agrees with that plank in the platform. But changing the way our elected representatives are chosen is hardly the same as disenfranchising particular categories of our population. And talking about amending an amendment to the Constitution is hardly the same as taking away one of the top 10 Bill of Rights or going after those. The 10th Amendment, for those who may not, or the 17th Amendment, for those who may not keep track of these things every day of their lives, is the one that talks about how our senators are elected. And originally there was a notion that many of our founding fathers believed strongly in, that the upper house should represent the states and the lower house would represent the people. And I think it's a reasonable question, although I don't think this is one that's going to be addressed anytime in the near future, about whether our senators are more accountable to the people by way of indirect election by legislatures choosing them, or by the kind of approach we have now with statewide campaigns for them. So, to me, I don't see it as freedom at risk, and I also don't see it as something that has been actively pursued in recent years. So, I'm spending more of my time focused on what's on the near-term horizon for our party and for our state.
Let's go to the big story, Jeb Bush.
Jeb is a big story.
Is he 8 years too late?
Well, for some people could say he's more than 8 years too late, in that 1994 was a exceedingly significant election for him and for the country, and that's the one where he fell just shy of Lawton Childs in Florida.
A little mix-up there, too, during that election.
Yeah, well, it is Florida, and we've had a couple of dalliances sure. with Florida affecting the national politics. It's interesting, in the 1990s, he was a champion of a lot of reform proposals that were very well received in the Heritage Foundation, a lot of conservative organizations around the country. And I think he's a good and decent man in many, many ways. Recently, though, he seems to have been on the forefront of criticizing some issues that, in all honesty, received majority support in the Republican Party. So his approach to immigration, his approach to education, and his approach to health care are, at least if I understand them correctly, not majority views in the Republican Party. So it's interesting that he seems to be leading with a general election strategy rather than a strategy that appeals to the largest number of Republicans to nominate him. But he has ties with major donors around the country. It seems that this will likely lessen the odds of a Mitt Romney being recruited for a third time around. It seems to affect Chris Christie's calculus in terms of ties with Wall Street. All of this, though, I find to be very distant from the interest of Western states like ours. I think there are other current and former governors that will be in this field that is not yet defined. I think Jeb, given his family name, is going to get a huge amount of media attention and probably a lot of Washington and New York donor attention. But I look at governors like Mike Pence and Scott Walker, Bobby Jindal, and some
but
others
it is
that are
a
less
money
hostile
game.
Names. It is a money game. Every once in a while, it was a money game in 1992, and how in the world did the governor of Arkansas get the Democrat nomination?
Because he wasn't going against the first teamers.
Well, that was very true.
Paul Tsongas.
That's right. Well, I know Paul Tsongas didn't live much past
right.
that cycle.
God bless him, but yeah.
Yeah. And that's very, very true, but it's just another way, you look at it, it's a money game. How did Barack Obama end up out-fundraising Hillary Clinton? No one could have really seen that at the outset. So it's very, very true. You can take a lot of the oxygen out of the room with a big name and a big money base, but I don't think it's going to deter these others from entering the race and competing.
I'm with you, and there is a magic to Iowa. There is a magic to New Hampshire and to some degree South Carolina, but let me hit you with this. Historically, metaphorically, a third Bush. I mean, you look at the connections of the father of GW, and then Jeb with his group. That's a lot. That's like the Russian army in the day when they were good.
Yes, but that also is his greatest hurdle, because I think instinctively a lot of Americans, and I think a lot of conservatives, aren't terribly fond of a dynasty, a royal family. And I don't personally see the Bushes of having conducted themselves in that way, but I completely understand how it is seen that way. And it isn't sort of, Barack Obama was, of course, the favorite spokesman for the Republican Party. But he was talking about how people are probably going to be ready for that new car smell in the next election. And everyone understood it as a jab at Hillary, and it probably was first and foremost. But it's going to apply on our side, too.
I'm with you. And one more thing about the Bushes, though, Jeb has a hidden weapon, his wife and his son, George P. I mean, that's something that, you know, whether you agree with the Republicans on the outreach or not, that's something that we've never seen.
Right. Well, we have a few others who are bringing things that we have never seen. I mean, Bobby Jindal is a whole full cup of things we've never seen.
I would give you that.
And in terms of things that have been done in their states by way of reform and governance, I mean, you look at what Kasich has done in Ohio, what Pence has done in Indiana, what Walker has faced and overcome in Wisconsin. And, you know, I think there's a lot of really different angles. So, frankly, I'm excited to see these guys get into the mix and start talking about the future.
I got to hit you with one more, though. Do they cancel each other out, which paves the road for a Romney or a Bush?
Well, there are a couple of other forces out there that are going to contend seriously. One is Rand Paul. Rand probably has the most significant national organization so far. And I think that he will go deep into the primary. I think in many ways the field is going to be shaped by Rand and not Rand when it comes down to where the Republican primary process goes. We shall see. But I just see this as not being the same slugfest as we had last time. But we've got some pretty threshold issues to debate. And in the current crop of people that seems to be stepping to the race, I think they're capable of shaping that debate in a constructive way.
Chairman, we appreciate it, sir.
Thank you, Kevin. Anytime.
Yeah, you know, we could go on and on about politics.
It's not healthy.
You're listening to 580KIDO.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men.
Men, men, men,
bum, 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 bum. Manly man segment here. Dave Burnett with us, Kate Milley. Ho, ho, ho.
And a bottle of rum.
Week from now, it'll be Christmas, right?
Christmas Day, a week from right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, is it me or has the season gone just really fast?
Well, you snuck out of town, so that broke it up, and we had really cold weather. While you were gone, we were up near 60 degrees. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was actually warmer here than it was in Nashville. It was like 40 degrees.
So, you know, the end of the world coming because of all that. And so I think that's kind of broken it up. It felt like Christmas, and it didn't feel like Christmas. And, you know, let's be honest. When's the last time Christmas really felt like Christmas? What, when you were 10?
When I had a onesie.
Yeah, I mean,
you
honestly.
Remember those when those things happened? Did you ever have those things where... Just like in the late 70s, early 80s, where it was like flannel, not flannel, but felt or not felt. You know what I'm saying?
It'd be flannel, yeah.
They zipped up.
Mm-hmm.
They were big. Now they're kind of coming back.
Nah, I didn't know they were coming
back. I want a Captain America one.
Of course you do. Yeah, but you know, everybody always says, I'm not in the Christmas spirit this year. Who really ever gets in it? Because it almost becomes... And I know there's those that are going to say, you're a Christmas hater.
Right.
It becomes a pain for those who like routine, for those who like, you know, getting the job done and getting on with it. It almost becomes just a nuisance.
The job done?
Yeah, like here, getting work done, getting the website done, getting that website built and stories on it, getting the things done. And I guess it's because we get our eye off of what the message of Christmas truly is, and we get all caught up in the trappings of it.
Right.
So,
I've got a sports question for you.
Oh, boy.
You, when you're covering the Mountain West in Boise State for our sister station, you're familiar with the work of now new Oregon, Oregon State Beaver head football coach Gary Anderson, right?
Of Wisconsin?
Well, no, he's a Beaver now.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, when he was with Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
So, Utah State, he did wonders for that program.
Yep.
Then he goes to Wisconsin. He's there, what, 2 years?
Yep.
2 years.
Two or three.
And then comes back, now two,
was it
actually,
two?
Because
okay.
he has to pay $3 million because he didn't last.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, he goes to Corvallis. He was pretty successful at Wisconsin, I thought. Why would he do that? You think just the allure of going back to the West already?
You know, it's interesting, and I think I wrote a blog about it a while back here when it first happened. because I went to Oregon State. I am a Beaver. I'm an Oregon State alum. That's where I went to college. And I'm excited for him going there. And people in Wisconsin probably hate him. Can't figure out why would you go to Oregon State. I think it is. I think he's a West Coast kind of guy. I do.
Right, but to leave Wisconsin, pretty big, pretty successful program after only 2 years.
I guess it's, you're never too old to chase your dream, Kevin.
You think so?
He's chasing a dream, yeah.
That was his dream.
Yeah, he wants to be in the Pac, what are they, 12, 16, 4, 10 now?
I see.
Pac 8 one time.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, and so, you know, I mean, it's much the same as Mike Sanford is offered, an offensive coordinator job at Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to stay here. You know, his dream is here. He's chasing his dream here, not there.
Well, he's a West Coast guy, though.
No, absolutely.
In the East, they play a different brand of football.
Mm-hmm. But still, if you want to chase the paycheck, that's where the money would be. But then, you know, you look at there's several people who have wound up going. You had Coach Wilcox, who went to Tennessee, and it was see ya, got out of there and went to Washington, now at USC.
Well, he was smart just because Derek Dooley was a disaster.
Mm, oh boy, is that the truth.
Yeah. They're still talking about how bad Derek Dooley was.
Yeah. But, you know, for Oregon's coach to bail out and go to Nebraska, and then Wisconsin's coach bails out and goes to Oregon State, and it was an interesting round of musical chairs.
It was, which leads me to another question for you.
All right. Sports or otherwise?
Sports and slash life.
Okay.
Now, I saw the story yesterday, and I saw our friend Ben Maller talking about it, or heard him talking about it this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to do with Bo Pelini. You know the Bo Pelini story?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've been fired. I've been fired.
Let's not talk about that.
and it's funny, the time of year, this is the time of year when broadcast companies fire people. And
which never has made sense. It's like, happy holidays, everybody.
Well, it's funny because a career built or an industry built on community service. And I've told this story many times. I was fired from Pittsburgh 10 days before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The whole station, and how pathetic was I, the whole station was, they just were done with me. The whole station was going on vacation. I go, well, I'll fill in till you come back. No. Well, I'd like a job in sales. No. Well, no one worked harder than you. Really? Yes. You're just like, ouch. So I had a chance to, I did local TV there, right? It was kind of like the O'Reilly Factor, but featuring me. I'm sure you would have tuned in all the time.
I would have been just like the O'Reilly Factor, I'm sure then.
It was the best ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very honest. As you know, I'm very honest on this program in a disingenuous sort of way. I'm just adding your comments there. But, I believe in transparency. So Bo Pelini, head football coach at Nebraska, pretty intense guy, gets fired, has a meeting with a bunch of players. Bad mouths the administration, uses a lot of words that we can't use, not even off the air. And it gets out, and now people are saying that he shouldn't get his new job at Youngstown State. But, you know, when do you, you know, people always say you need to take the high road, but we're talking about people's livelihoods. And look, Bo Pelini doesn't have to work the rest of his life, day in the rest of his life, unlike us. But when do you sit back and say, you know, I was wronged? So do you not badmouth an employer and go, hey, thank you, sir. May I have another when they get you? You know, well, how do you handle that?
I guess when you have enough money that you can handle it.
Right. But I mean, you know, people always say, well, you shouldn't badmouth them. I think if people do you wrong, why should you protect them? Well, it's a small world. Okay. And Pelini was out of line. Yeah, he shouldn't have said that. He shouldn't have said those words to those young men, and it shows why he wasn't a Nebraska man, per se. But on the other hand, I mean, when you – and for people listening here, maybe I'll write a blog about it. It'll be compelling.
That'd be good.
You know, for the greater question, okay, so he's meeting with his quote-unquote employee/coworkers. It's the last meeting of the year, and he's saying – this athletic director never met with me, blah, 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 blah. He needs to go. And I'm not going to cover for him, so good luck, guys. Does that serve a purpose? Man, you're not talking about this. You're not responding at all.
It was just a very deep philosophical question you're asking here.
I'm a deep philosophical guy.
I would like to see a blog on this. This would be good.
Especially when I say to you, hey, what do you got? It's not that I have nothing. I'm looking for something deep, something philosophical. That's the way I look at it. I think, okay, you're dealing with student athletes. Well, they're kids. Let's be honest. These kids use more swear words and this, that, and others than we do.
Yes. You know, it's always like, oh, that teacher used a curse word. Okay, have you been in the hallways of a grade school or in particular middle school lately?
Yeah.
Holy cow. Well, which you have. You go to a middle school and it's like, oh my goodness, I'm getting an education here.
I've got another one for you here at 580K IDO. I'm just full of it today.
You are kind of full of it.
What do you make of the Bora Senior? And this made news everywhere. And folks, if you're listening, across the country, look, we don't have murders here, thankfully. And we
We had one yesterday,
Right. We had that horrific shooting, terrible tragedy, that killing, yes, but not every day. Right. So again, our big news stories here in Idaho, new stoplights, this, that, and the other. You got to admit, this would not make news anywhere else. We have a high school senior deciding to plagiarize an article with the Boise Weekly that was plagiarized with permission, which I don't really think that you can plagiarize with permission.
No, it's not that. Then it's not plagiarism.
Right. So to send a message to Sherry Ibarra, because her website plagiarized Jana Jones' website. And from what I understand, I guess the mother gave the kid the idea now.
Well, yeah, of course she did.
Which kind of defeated the purpose. But, yeah. Okay, I have an issue with Mrs. Ibarra, or doctor, no, not doctor, whatever. Just because.
Superintendent.
Yes.
Elect.
The leader. Mm-hmm. The great leader. I have an issue with her because you have to be held to a higher standard. Educators, you can't be an educator and let this happen. You have to have a zero tolerance for it. There's other issues. But to take that type of shot, I mean, what's the purpose of that, Dave Burnett?
Well, you know, and I don't want to attack the young woman because not fair to do that. But I saw that story and I saw it on Channel 5 Plus 1 last night.
Yes, they're looking out. No, that's, I think I don't know. Who's
they're looking out for us.
Okay.
They're looking out for you anyway. they're on the lookout for you. And I saw that story yesterday, and you know, they do this big story on the girl, and then you had the, you know, the two anchors. Oh, we need to keep an eye on her. She's going places. And I'm thinking, her mother had her do, her mother had an issue with it all. Her mother gave her the suggestion. Her mother allegedly, you know, who knows who did the work on the paper. And then this was done a long time ago. It was done early December, but it wasn't until the AP cut wind of the story and did the story, and then it's gone viral, whatever that means.
Look, I have to tell you something else.
Yeah.
Speaking of the news media, I'm sitting there, you know, Kevin McDonough, the guy that runs the Potato Bowl.
Hugh Downs.
Exactly.
Kevin McDonnell.
McDonnell. Great guy. He pens a thing in the paper about, the community benefits from the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. I think
financially.
Right. Yeah. I think that's great. I think it's wonderful that these kids come in and we do what we can. But then it's like everybody just picks up that story and they okay, print is struggling. All media is really struggling, but I mean, really? So he writes an editorial that gets picked up by the Statesman and then it becomes a news story. I'm going, okay. Is that really what it takes these days?
Well, I mean, there are those stories, and we have that story every year with the famous Potato Bowl.
They go bowling.
NPC, whatever it is now.
They go bowling.
Mm-hmm. And we have that, and it's look what it's doing for our local economy, which is good that it does that.
Okay, how does it?
Well, you have hotel rooms that are filled. Let me finish. You asked me. Let me finish. You have hotel rooms that are booked. That means that the help who are cleaning those rooms have jobs.
How many, though?
You have restaurants that are filled with people. So that means that the wait staff, the cooks, that they then get tips. They get, you know, money from that. You have the mall, which you have. And I happen to have stumbled into the mall yesterday. And I saw some people with Western Michigan gear on. It's like, whoa, look at that. Because what caught my eye, it said Broncos. And it was the wrong color.
Yeah.
It was brown. It's like, what? Oh. So, you know, they're out spending money. So, yeah. So, you know, how much? I don't know. But it does add to the economy. And it adds a little national attention for a blip on the radar for a moment as you have ESPN here broadcasting the game.
Yeah, but how much does it really add to the economy when you think they're not, you know, and look, attendance was tough for the Mountain West Championship game. You'll have, what, 10,000 maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's paper. There's a lot of TV and media outlets that have gotten tickets to give away. Where's ours?
Yeah, I was just going to say, did we get any?
No, huh? Yeah, that's because Kevin knew that you mispronounced his name. So, you know, so you have that. But yeah, it does. It adds to the economy, and it's done well enough that it has survived.
I'm with you, but, and look, anything is better than nothing. But on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, how much does it really add based on the fact that you don't, you know, get that sellout? And it would be nice if it did sell out.
Very few bowls do.
Well, the bowls that I go to sell out.
What's the last bowl you went to?
Sugar Bowl.
What year was that?
05, 06, 07.
10 years ago?
05?
Yeah.
07, 08? I really haven't gone to any
bowls.
Did
you buy? You're lying to me now, aren't you?
I haven't gone to any bowls. I was just...
You know where liars go, don't you? They go to the Kevin Miller Show, everybody.
Oh!
Bada-bing! That does it. I got to do this for you.
I got a backup bell here.
Oh, did you get a backup bell?
Yeah, Linda felt bad for me, so she gave me hers because she doesn't like when people do this.
Okay. Traffic now, Kevin, as you're coming up.